I'm going to start by saying I know this is not a comfortable topic. However, a lot of times it's the uncomfortable topics that we really need to tackle, because if we don't, the problem is just going to get worse and worse. We're talking about eating disorders, okay? Because an estimated 9% of the U.S. population, according to national records, about 9% of our population in this country will have an eating disorder in their lifetime. To give you perspective, that's close to 29 million Americans who will likely struggle with an eating disorder at least once while they are alive. That's wild. And this week in particular is Eating Disorder Awareness Week, to really bring awareness, to combat maybe some of the misconceptions people have about eating disorders, and to address healthy ways in order to navigate through some of those issues that some people might be facing. So to tackle that today, we have Clotilde Dudley Smith, who is the Director of Health Science Program over at Quinnipiac University, to discuss this more in length. And Clotilde, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show and to talk about this. I know it's not an easy topic, but we really appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This is such an important topic and such an important issue that tends to get overlooked, and I really appreciate you giving me the time to talk about it.
Yeah, of course. Now, first of all, it's interesting because growing up, when I heard the term eating disorder, I always immediately thought you're anorexic or you're bulimic. But when you hear the, I mean, those stats I just started with, are there other things considered as eating disorders, not just those two?
Oh, absolutely. So just to kind of give you just a brief history, eating disorders have actually been around since like 700 BC, like when they used to have banquets, and then they would purge, meaning to vomit, and then go back and have more of their banquets. So things have been happening for many, many, many years, but they really weren't beginning to show a lot until the 1970s. And that's really when they were looked at a little more closely. So the most common are the anorexia and bulimia that really became at the forefront in the 70s. But there's also was just recognized actually in the 1990s was binge eating. Mm-hmm. And that's someone that just eats and eats. But the difference, people think, well, what's the difference between bulimia and binge eating? Binge eating is where you eat meat and you don't get rid of it. You don't take laxatives. You don't vomit. And so these people tend to be obese. So that is another form of eating disorders. And they're all kind of the same component as to why it's being done. I think, you know, we talk about the importance of knowing that this is happening and awareness. And again, thank you for mentioning National Awareness, Eating Disorder Awareness Week, because that is really what we're trying to do and bring people to understand more about it. And in 1983, we lost Karen Carpenter from the Carpenters. And she was really, after she passed, and it was well published that she passed from an eating disorder, that really did bring some insight. And I just want to mention, you did say how many people have the eating disorders. There's about 30 million at some point in their life. Variations, but they can contribute to 10,000 deaths.
Wow.
So that's, yeah, it's even more staggering.
Yeah. I mean, and let's talk about how we get to that point. Because again, these are very severe cases. And I think that is one of the biggest misconceptions. I can very vividly remember being in middle school and hearing for the first time anorexic. And the reason I had heard it is because, you know, it's middle school girls and people care about their weight and they care about the way that they look. And to me, it was just I was, you know, I was young. I was very uneducated at that point about this. But I thought, OK, it's somebody who's just not eating enough. But then you realize that it's not just someone who woke up one day and decided, you know what, I'm just not going to eat today. There is a really long process before they just get to this point of becoming anorexic or bulimic. Tell us, how do people develop an eating disorder?
So you mentioned middle school, which is interesting. So I just want to address that. You can actually begin an eating disorder pre-puberty. So as young as 8 years old.
Wow.
And even
that's
younger
awful.
Sometimes.
Oh, my gosh.
And it is. It's, you know, we don't typically think of that, right? We think of, you know, older. But the most the most common ages are between the ages of 12 and 25. But
wow.
And of course, you know, these are the essential years of growing and whatnot. But the most important thing that I really want people to take away from today is that it's not a choice. It is a mental health issue. It's not just I'm not going to, you know, eat any longer. And you brought up an excellent point that it takes a long time to get to the point where they're doing these type of things, that they're not eating, or they're eating and they're what we call purging, again, vomiting, taking laxatives to get rid of it, or restricting their food. They will know exactly how many calories they're having. They know exactly what's happening and how much they can eat and how much they need to exercise. And so it becomes a point where if you know somebody in your family, a friend, you need to have them get help. And that help is very important, because what they're feeling is a loss of control. So they feel in their life, basically, that, and it could have been brought on by many things. It could be bullying. You mentioned, you know, middle school girls. And of course, this isn't just also, by the way, in women, it's also men as well. We don't always think about that, but there are over 6 million men have been affected by eating disorders,
sure.
which is another shocking statistic.
It's true.
But typically, you know, it's that weight bullying, it's childhood trauma, it's stresses, just, you know, stresses of life. And there is a genetic component as well. So it doesn't mean that you're going to get an eating disorder, but you are more vulnerable if someone in your family has had it, for example, or that you have, you know, other mental health disorders in the family. So that you become more vulnerable. But they don't, obviously they don't want to do this, but if you can kind of understand, there's a voice going on that's saying you have no control. You're being bullied. You have stress. You have things going on in your life and you have no control. So I want to escape reality. And by doing that, I begin to listen to those voices that the only way I have control is to monitor what I'm eating. I'm going to control my food. And so, you know, again, I feel very strongly that, you know, parents in particular will be, you know, just eat. And unfortunately, that's not how it works.
Right.
This is deeper than that.
I mean, well, that's just saying you have to break almost like a mental wall that's really blocking them from being able to even view food as being a component that's on their side. I mean, they almost look at it as being like the enemy. They're causing their trauma. The food and eating is causing their trauma. So you either cut it off or you get rid of it.
Yes, but you're spot on, exactly. And they feel, a lot of them feel they're not good enough. And they're being in a lot of cases, they're being made to feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's ironic. I used to think, you know, people are being bullied because you're not a zero. I mean, in my day, I didn't even know what a zero was.
So, oh, I know, right?
But this
know.
Is becoming,
it's
yeah, it's becoming, you know, insane as far as people, you know, judging you. But keep
body
in mind,
shaming
too,
all that.
It's all body shaming. Exactly.
We are chatting today with Clotilde Dudley-Smith, who is the director of health science program at Quinnipiac University. And this week is Eating Disorder Awareness Week. But this is a problem all throughout the year in America, because we have an estimated 9% of our population who are projected to have an eating disorder in their lifetime. So it's a very important topic. I know it's an uncomfortable one, but it's one that we want to bring awareness to and normalize the conversation and certainly be able to detect what could be leading somebody down the path of an eating disorder. How do you know, Clotilde, that you have an eating disorder or you're beginning to have severe problems with your eating habits? How do you detect that?
That's an excellent question. And this is not only for someone to know for themselves, but others as well, friends, family. So you really can't, there are some cases, very few actually, that you can see, you know, someone getting thinner and be concerned. But for the most part, you can't recognize a person with an eating disorder just by looking at them. Because again, we all have to remember it's a mental health issue. And so if there's a preoccupation with food, with their weight, with their appearance, if there's things of like food rituals, you know, taking tiny portions, not completing their meal, hiding the food, and again, these counting of calories. The interesting thing is you may see them, for example, use an excessive amount of condiments or artificial sweeteners in abundance. You may see social withdrawal or mood swings. Again, keeping in mind about the mental health issue. There could be GI issues, loss of hair, hair thinning. And then, of course, there's in the younger population, they could actually, their hormones are affected. So a lot of times cases where women are affected, their periods will stop. So that's something that is very concerning as far as, you know, those type of changes. The other thing you can watch for is family and friends is, you know, are they eating and going immediately to the bathroom? You know, that could be a sign that they're going to now throw that up. And wearing baggy clothing sometimes to kind of disguise the fact that the weight is coming off very rapidly.
Yeah, I mean, and another thing that you brought up earlier in this conversation that I think is worth noting is even if maybe you yourself are a parent or a grandparent, but the way you view food is not in a healthy way. Would you say that that's something you could, I know you had mentioned genetics could be something that plays a role. So whether you have an eating disorder or maybe you yourself view food or view body weight in a very negative way, is that something you could pass on to the next generation?
Well, typically, again, there's more of a vulnerability, but of course, it doesn't necessarily mean that's going to happen. But there definitely is more of a vulnerability with that, absolutely. And we have to say, you had mentioned this, you know, body shaming. Unfortunately, our whole, you know, the media, the social media, right? It's all about how we look, and that's. You know, that, you know, we need to be a certain way. And that's both for men and women, right? And so when we look at that and we think a lot of them are unattainable, right? So how many are airbrushed? Or I've been to conferences where they actually show, you know, when you're seeing people in magazines, that's not typically what they look like. They do many different things to make it look different than that. So people think of this idealistic way that they want to be, and that is not helping the situation. And so they tend to, actually, there was a study done, now that I'm recalling, there was a study done in another country where they did not have any TVs or any really media to do that, and they did not have any eating disorders. And then when they went ahead and gave them media to show, I think they actually put TVs into the country and had them watch this, things had started changing because they started thinking, gee, I'm not good enough. That's what I'm supposed to look like, and I don't look like that. And I'm going to get that way no matter how I have to do it.
Yeah, and I do want to also highlight Clotilde specifically has really been very dedicated to this issue. In fact, recently presenting at the National Teaching Professors Conference on Education and Prevention of Eating Disorders in College Students, you wrote a peer-reviewed journal on the topic of anorexia nervosa and the risk of exercise. You've received grant funding for research on eating disorders. Is there any place you recommend, Clotilde, that where do you tell people to go if they want to learn more, if they want to read more about this, understand it a little bit better, and get the resources if they do need help?
Oh, absolutely. So first, most importantly, when I say get help, that means make sure they get to a doctor, whether they are even in the realization that they have an eating disorder. They need to get to a doctor, a medical doctor. And it's a team approach, so you have to keep in mind it's not a one-stop situation. They'll be working with a doctor, an eating disorder specialist, a nutritionist, and they all need to work together. And sometimes it can take months or years, but it will work. You need to make sure that all of that's being done. It's not something, and again, I have to stress this, to parents in particular, you can't control it at home. So I really recommend that the National Eating Disorders, and the website is www.nationaleatingdisorders.org, has a wealth of information for those that think they may have one, to families or friends that suspect their loved ones have that, and they can, the wealth of information from how to get treatment, who to go to for treatment, how to talk about it, what the signs are, and it's just a wonderful source.
And again, this is Eating Disorders Awareness Week going on until March 3rd, but this is a topic that really needs to be at top of mind 365 days a year. And so, Clotilde, I want to thank you so much for keeping this a priority personally, professionally, out there in public. And thank you for sharing all of that here on WICC.
Thank you so very much for having me, and I really appreciate this opportunity to try to get the word out there so that people can be aware and to help.
I agree. And you're very welcome. Please feel free to come back anytime. Clotilde Dudley-Smith, an assistant professor of health science studies at Quinnipiac University.